All right, hello. Welcome back to another Fresh Brewed episode. This is our fourth episode of Lattes and Lasers, and I'm pretty glad everybody's here listening. At least I hope everybody's here listening.
I hope so too.
You know, we're here to talk about all the things we hope everybody wants to hear. We think what everybody wants to hear. So I am joined by my co-host, Miss Amy.
Hi, Holly. How's it going?
You know, it's going.
Yeah.
We're here.
We decided to hop on early today. Yes. So yeah. Knocking some things off our to-do list a little early today. Yeah. But yeah, I'm excited to be back, and I think that like every week we are making progress technologically.
We really could use an engineer.
Yeah, an audio video, like an AV engineer would be nice. Yeah. But
we're low budget.
Afford that. We're very low budget.
So. Very low budget.
Yeah. So, you know, Holly, as we start every episode, what are we drinking this week?
So today we decided to do something a little different, and I have never done this before.
Neither
so we're doing I. a we're doing a cold brew concentrate this time. I've done cold brew. I have.
Cold we have brew. Our little cold brews.
Yeah, I have cold brewed coffee before, like brewed it myself, but I've never bought like the concentrate. So this comes in a bottle. It's very concentrated. Usually do like half and half, you know, half concentrate, half water to do that. So it's strong.
It's very strong. So I was like, I'm not going to add half water. So I filled half of this. Well, I put some ice, and then I put half of the cold brew concentrate, and then, well, so then it was like 2/3 full, and then I filled the rest up with almond milk. I was like, that's close enough.
Well, I did.
Girl, this is strong.
I did half of the concentrate, half water, and then I did some creamer. I bought the Mean Girls creamer, and because I wanted to try it, because, you know, I'm a sucker for marketing, and it's not bad. It's strong. But it's not bad.
I probably should have diluted it a little bit more.
But I do like cold brews because they tend to have a little less acidity to them. That kind of thing.
And what brand is this? I don't know if we mentioned this.
This is from Target. It's their brand. It's their Good and Gather brand. And when did they change to Good and Gather? It used to be something different.
Up and Up. It was Up and Up in the last year or two. Like, you still see some stuff with the Up and Up packaging because they're probably just trying to like
we're
both big fans of Target, so we figured why not try their cold brew.
Well, and you know, I was trying to find information online about it to see like what people are saying. I mean, there's not a whole lot of information other than it's just a cold brew, but what I did find was there were a lot of good ratings on it, that people actually liked it and rated it as one of the better ones out there. Now, I know there are some out there. I did see on Amazon, like there's Jot and some other ones, and they're a lot more pricey than this one. So I guess
this was pretty reasonable.
Right. So for value, this is pretty good. And if you're at Target anyway, you just pick it up while you're there, right?
It is in the shelf stable area by like the regular like coffee beans. It's not in the cooler area, which is where I looked first.
Correct. It's not chilled. Correct. Yes. Yeah. I want to say there were a couple other ones when I was there too. I don't remember what brands they were, but I just said, hey, let's try this one. It's inexpensive and it's worth trying. And so that's what we're doing. And we both put them in our little glass can cups, Libby cups.
It has a bit of a chocolatey taste.
Yeah, it kind of does.
There's like a
it?
Little bit of a chocolatey tone to it. And I know it's not my milk because the milk is just plain almond milk. Yeah. But yeah, I could see me drinking this a lot in the summer, especially.
Yeah.
I do a lot of iced coffee, cold brews. I truly do it all year round, but like in the summer, I drink more
of it. Yeah. I like it. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, too.
Like I said, we used to cold brew coffee all the time. That's what we did.
Yeah. I think this is maybe something I'll pull out in this, like I said, in the warmer months.
Yeah.
Probably would actually dilute it though. I'm afraid I'm about to like wig out on this coffee.
Well, I don't know what the caffeine, you know, content is, because I didn't really find, like I said, I couldn't find a lot of stuff on this. But
I
it
guess
is,
we'll find out.
it's a medium roast. It's very limited on information. It does say that it doesn't contain any of the 9 major allergens. So if you have allergies, you probably are okay with it to try it.
I sure hope coffee doesn't have gluten.
You never
I mean, gluten's
know.
in a lot of stuff you wouldn't realize as a gluten-free
Yeah,
person, but I will tell you that.
Totally is.
What I did like is that it said once opened, it's good for 2 weeks, like 14 days.
That's nice.
I don't think I would normally have coffee last that long.
No.
So I don't think that'll be a problem, but I'm glad that it's not something that'll like after 3 days,
Right,
like
you gotta hurry up and drink
expired.
it all.
But I think I might add like maybe a flavored creamer or something to it, or definitely water it down a little bit.
Yeah, I think you should.
I think that is what I missed out on. And who knows, maybe it's going to cause me to like super focus the rest of the
Hey,
day and I'm going to get a lot of stuff accomplished. And if that's the case, my business will be successful.
Benefit. Yeah, it'll benefit
Because
from
there are
your
days when I can't focus and run into problems. So, hey, folks, if you want to buy our next cup of coffee, go to lattesandlasers.com, click on support. You can buy us a coffee, throw us $5, help us keep this podcast going. We would love your support. Every little bit helps, doesn't it, Holly?
It does. It really does. If you want us to do better, you'll want to support us.
We do have some interesting coffees coming down the pipeline that we have picked out. But
yes,
if you are a coffee roastery and you want us to try it and you want to send us coffee, we also would not be opposed to that.
Nope, not opposed. Not at all.
And we'll be honest, like you're not going to buy my review. I'll be honest.
No, I've always been that way.
I'll
too.
also be
Honest.
Honest when I mess up and don't read the directions. Because you probably saw in the show notes or the title of the episode a little bit of what we're talking about. I wanted to remind everyone of a couple of things. We are not lawyers. This is not legal advice.
No,
we don't
exactly.
play lawyers on TV. We are sharing our research and our own experiences with this very complex topic. And if you're not sure on anything about this topic, consult with an attorney. You're going to want to talk to like an IP attorney, patent, trademark attorney.
Yeah, I
there
actually
are
know.
lots of them.
Yeah, we could probably list a couple if they're interested. I could probably ask and see if like the ones I know would be interested in us putting them out there for people to reach out to.
I just wanted to make sure we explicitly stated that, because today's topic is a dive into something that touches every maker and entrepreneur creator out there, which is navigating the complex waters of intellectual property. So we're going to be breaking down trademark, copyright, infringement, how to play it safe, how to be smart.
You've probably heard people say the words IP or intellectual property. That's kind of what the general term of most of that is. And it can really be a savior for you or your worst nightmare if you're violating it, right? So let's start with trademarks. We thought we would break it down so everybody understands what these terms mean. And trademarks are like your brand signature. So if you think of like the Nike swoosh, right? Or the golden arches, these things tend to protect logos, names, slogans. So like, you know, you remember the Burger King way back in the day, where's the beef? You know, that's a slogan. And that would be protected under trademark laws by that company that owns that trademark. They're the holder of that.
The next kind of piece there is copyright. And this, what this does is it protects original works of authorship or creation. So it's what keeps your unique designs, writings, and creations legally yours. And, you know, there have been a lot more cases like this kind of creeping up as of late.
Yeah.
And Holly, I think when these lines get crossed, makers can often find themselves in some pretty hot water. And we've seen quite a few things in the news recently of this type of stuff happening.
What happens is when you start like taking somebody else's trademark or copyright, you're infringing. It's called infringement. Basically, you have things that just might be a little bit inspired by it that could get you in trouble, or even just flat out taking something and putting it on a shirt, a sign, whatever, right? So we're going to talk about a few really popular trademarks that we've seen out there, some things that have been in the news, and just those types of things that can be, you know, infringement issues that we think everybody should just be aware of.
First up is a big giant, a titan in copyright and trademarks, Disney, right? Yeah. Everybody knows yeah. Disney. Their characters, yeah. movies, and merchandise are globally recognized and they are fiercely protected.
Yeah.
You know, using Elsa or the Mickey ears or something like that without Disney's like approval, it's a fast track to legal woes. And they have entire departments of attorneys who are digging in, finding people who are copying their things. I know I personally always say no whenever anyone asks me to do anything Disney, because it's not worth putting my livelihood at risk.
There has been something, it was last year, I think some makers were sued because I think they were making mouse ears.
Mouse ears, yeah.
Yeah, like they're really cute ones, and they are cute. They're not really taking the designs of Disney away from them that they're making as competing with it, but they're taking the inspiration from Disney with the mouse ears and making their own. And Disney, they gave them plenty of opportunities and finally were like, no.
Right. I mean, there's people who have entire shops and businesses that are based on things like the Mickey Mouse ears, and they are beautiful. Some of the ears are just stunning, and they're inspired by different characters. It's a slippery slope. We'll just
it
say
really
that.
Is. It really you know? Is. And you can go on Etsy and you can be like, well, I bought the set of SVGs that were Disney. Isn't that okay for me to use? No, the person making the SVGs is you're infringing on Disney's trademark, and that does not give you the right. You need to still be aware of what those things are. Yeah.
Another big thing that was in the news very recently in like December was the whole Luke Combs thing. So he had attorneys who were looking for different IP, copyright, trademark infringement type stuff. And they came across a small maker who was selling tumblers with his likeness on it on like Amazon. Yeah. And we're talking like she sold like 18, yeah. right? Not a lot.
Right.
Well, they sued her for what? Wasn't it like 20? No, it was a lot. I'm not going to say exactly how much, but it was a lot of money. And she was like, whoa. And eventually, like, Luke Combs was like, whoa, we're not, no, that's not what I wanted. But not every big star is going to do that.
No.
And so you can't rely on public outcry about your attorney suing this, like, mom who's just side hustling. Like, you can't rely on that hope.
And that brings me to the just because somebody else is doing it doesn't mean you should do it. They are going to get caught.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not just Disney. Look, we just had the Super Bowl, right? NFL, NBA, MLB, all of those are tightly locked down when it comes to trademarking. And I see that all the time, right?
Yep.
You see people who are making merch or in our industry earrings or whatever, and that just means no, you shouldn't you're infringing on the trademark of those things. Now I have seen some ways people have kind of gotten around it, just more like a color theme, like you could probably do like red circles with a little football on the bottom, and it really, you're not really saying that it's the Kansas City Chiefs,
right,
but you also cannot use any of that terminology in your tags, your descriptions, your anything, because that's considered still using them to sell your product.
Mm-hmm.
And so you cannot put that stuff in any of that anywhere. Like I said, just because somebody else is doing it doesn't mean you should be.
Absolutely. And fashion isn't a free for all either. Like, I know people who will like get the Nike logo, cut it out on vinyl, and like heat press it onto like a Gildan shirt or something.
Yeah.
Because my kid doesn't know the difference. And like, sure. Right. Not a big deal. But if you're going to try to sell those kind of like knockoffs, that's counterfeit, right? At that point.
Right.
You know, like luxury brands like Louis Vuitton, Gucci, Chanel, they all have their designs and logos trademarked. And like you said, I see things that are very either close to or completely infringing on those on Etsy all the time. You know, all those iconic patterns or symbols, they're completely off limit unless you have a license agreement. And like, let's also talk about like entertainment franchises are another big one.
Yeah.
Harry Potter, Star Wars, Marvel, those all have fan bases that are really eager for merch, but creating and selling products that are inspired by those items that are trademarked without that authorization is not a great idea, right?
Right.
You know, you mentioned the Super Bowl and football and Kansas City Chiefs. One really popular person right now is Taylor Swift. And, you know, making merch from a singer's music likeness, etc., it's a big no-no.
We actually came across an article that was from 2015 where her party really came down on Etsy sellers, right? Lots of cease and desist letters. And guess what? You are lucky if you get a cease and desist order or a letter, because then that means you have an opportunity to take it down. It's a warning to you that like you could be in violation and they could sue you if you don't oblige by what they're asking of you. So if you get a cease and desist order, you should definitely take action. Definitely take action.
Absolutely.
So yeah, she has applied for trademarks for, you know, lots of things like her album names, 1989, you know, her name is trademarked. There's just a lot out there. And one of the biggest things you see now with the Eras Tour is the In My Era merch. It is all over Etsy. And honestly, I just would not touch it. I wouldn't. I mean, eventually you're going to get caught and it's going to be a problem for you.
Right. I got one cease and desist or just like takedown of something on Etsy many years ago when I was kind of first starting out. And I thought maybe I'll sell some like SVG designs or something. It was some lyric from a song from a big artist. It was like, hey, this person has, you know, trademarked this. You got to take it down. And I was like, touche, noted.
Sorry, Amazon was, or my Alexa was playing music. I accidentally hit it again.
No problem.
It was playing Get Low by Lil Jon and the East Side
Boys. Of course. Get low. I mean, also topical given.
Yeah, we don't want music playing during our podcast.
No, we don't have money for that. A lot of times in some of the different groups that we're in on Facebook for other makers, you see someone either like violating these trademarks or to complaining about Etsy or Facebook shutting down their group.
Yeah.
And they don't know why.
Right.
But we all know why. You know, if you have three strikes or simply a shop that is nothing but counterfeit or trademark infringing designs, you're probably going to lose your shop.
Yeah. I think it's like it's three strikes and then you're out pretty much.
Yep.
Yeah. You know what you're doing. And look, I'm guilty.
Mm-hmm. Same.
I have made things. In fact, I know I had a tiered tray set that was Schitt's Creek and it was removed. I knew better. You know, sometimes you think, well, I'm just going to do something. And I've done fan art, right? Like where I've drawn things from different shows or whatever. And I have had some of those taken down when I did stickers before of that. Some are going to be way more strict and looking for you and hunting you down versus others. So, you know, really, I try my best not to touch any of that stuff if I can. Sometimes it's like, oh, God, I want to do that. I want to jump on that. You know?
Yep. I know.
The other thing that I have removed recently was anything smiley faces.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think people know that smiley faces are trademarked. And it's not even the originator of the smiley face. It's somebody, I think, who obtained the trademark for them or something that is the actual one. And they have been going around like on Redbubble and different places, everything smiley face gone. So I had taken down, I had tokens for my reward jars that were smiley faces. Had no idea. So I took them down and I have been asked to make them again. And I'm like, oh no, I'm not going to do that. I'm just not going to do it. Kind of also brings me to the question of like fan art, right? Whenever I've gone to Comic-Con, so in Denver, we have a really big Comic-Con. It's not as big as the San Diego one, but it's pretty big. And Artist Alley is just full of fan art, fan stuff, you know, the things that they create. Like I've purchased some super cute little drawings that were like little chibi style drawings of Walking Dead characters and Star Wars characters and stuff. And then I purchased a poster for my brother that was C-3PO and R2-D2, and they were dressed like the Blues Brothers. They had the hat and the
Oh, that's
sunglasses.
awesome.
And it's so cute, right? But that kind of thing got me thinking, like, how do they get away with it, right? How do you get away with it? So I wanted to kind of dive into the whole fan art thing. So for those of you who don't know, basically what fan art is an artist might take a character or something from that and kind of create something new from it, such as the C-3PO R2-D2 dressed like the Blues Brothers. It's kind of like their cute, fun fan art that they've made. It may not look exactly like the character, but they've kind of inspired it into that way, right? And so it kind of falls into like a legal gray area, really, because it's kind of like a form of expression or whatever. I think the problem comes in when you start charging for them. So, you know, I started looking, I'm thinking, okay, but how do they get away with that in the artist alleys? That stuff is still very much protected by the intellectual property right owner or whoever owns that type of art or what have you. I think what's happening with some of these is that a lot of those rights holders kind of are more selectively enforcing them. And sometimes it means it's limited to just that event, right? Like they're like, okay, it's just this event, you're doing it, it's fine, because it fosters that community and it fosters the fan base that makes, you know, everybody super excited. So their tolerance tends to be a little less there. But, you know, I look at that and I think, okay, yeah, you do that. But what if the off chance that somebody's like, no, you know, and you get in trouble for doing it. So just because you see a tolerance of it at these like conventions and that kind of thing, doesn't mean that the copyright doesn't exist. So just think about it. Think about, is it something worth it to you? So I really like it sometimes when I go to these events and I go down the artist alley and I see original artwork that's just, you know, maybe kind of, you know, space age and different things, and you know, kind of fall in that world, or their own, like, oh, what's the popular Japanese art?
Kawaii.
Yeah, like kawaii and different things like that. So yeah, so I think the idea is to really just kind of stick to more of the traditional. Yeah. So I think that you just have to be more cognizant and realize, like, is it worth the risk of financially gaining something, or is it going to cause you problems? Also, brands don't like if you're going to harm their brand.
Yeah.
This is something I see a lot at these Comic Cons sometimes, not as much as I have before, but where they'll take Disney characters or Star Wars characters and they'll like over sexualize them and into like statues and things. And you're just like, yeah. I mean, that is harmful to the brand. So even though they are trying to create fan art and being inspired by something, they're hurting it because that's not what that brand represents. And it's all over the place. It's all over the place. It's everywhere. So think twice about whether or not it's something you want to risk. But we see this stuff all the time in Facebook groups. People post something. And I love that other users of these groups are being a little bit more bold and saying, like, oh, did you have the trademark to that?
Right. You know? Or how much did the Disney license cost you? And they'll just say it, and then people will come in and say, oh, you're harassing that maker, they're just trying to share what they did. No, by allowing that, you are saying it's okay infringe on someone else's IP or copyright or trademark.
Right.
And even like makers at our level, we run into this too.
Yeah.
We've both had people rip off our designs or Etsy listings. And it's like, whoa, like you just copied everything, all my pictures. Like, there's no way you didn't do that. You know, one of the things that is helpful in navigating all of this is truly research. The U.S. Patent and Trademark Office's database is a treasure trove of information. Right. So if you have an idea for a concept or a new product, do the research first to make sure you're not stepping on anyone's trademark toes. And if you're really set on using a specific trademark or license or intellectual property, consider that licensing agreement. And you know, it may cost you upfront, but it's a legit way to incorporate those elements in your work. You've gone through that recently.
I actually just became licensed to create and sell merchandise for 20 different sororities. So if people aren't aware, yes, fraternities and sororities are trademarked. I saw that a lot over the holidays, people making ornaments for certain sororities. And I'm like, no. And I was fortunate enough to be told by somebody that I know who works at the headquarters of my sorority that those were trademarked. So it was one of those things that I learned kind of early on. And you really can't make anything without proper licensing. Yep. And it's a big process. And I will say this, sororities and fraternities are going to cost less than your big SEC conference football teams, even less than Disney. You know, you can get licensing, but it's going to cost you a lot of money. So like, for instance, with myself, I knew I wanted to get licensed, and I found a company that does licensing of Greek organizations. They do not do all Greek organizations. There's another company that does some, but you have to pay an application fee for each and every organization, right? So if I'm doing 20 and it's $20 per, it's 20 times 20. That application amount is due every year. You have to report your earnings every quarter, and you pay a royalty on that. So I only pay about a 10% royalty, or somewhere around there, per sorority that I create. In hindsight, had I realized, oh, and you have to carry certain insurance as well. You have to, you have to carry, you want to check on those things because you have to provide certificates of insurance. You basically have to make sure that you're protecting the organization that you are creating and selling merchandise for. And I think I didn't realize really how much cost was going to go into this and how much time would go into this, because it's not like I can just create a keychain and be like, okay, I want to sell this for all the sororities I'm licensed for. No, I have to create the design for each one, submit each one individually for each sorority to get approved before I can start selling that. And sometimes the time frame to get those approved takes a while. And then I could go and start making it and photographing it and listing it and doing all the things. So,
but you have to do it 20 times.
20 times.
For each individual item.
A lot of work. And at first I wasn't going to do 20. I was only going to do like five. And I thought, oh, well, what five would I actually do? Because, you know, I know which ones tend to be popular. It's a lot. And like I said, I'm on the low end of licensing.
Right.
So if I had done something bigger, like some of the bigger schools and stuff, and gone to through that company, you're talking more like $200 to $500 application fee per school that you might would do it with. It's a big process to go through. And yeah, I don't know if I would have done it all now. Like, it's like, yeah.
Well, your designs are awesome. The ones you've rolled out so far.
Right.
And it's a new avenue.
And it takes a lot of time. It really, really does. So yeah, if you're going to do something, look into licensing, find out the processes, what you have to do, do the steps to get through it so that, you know, you're not in violation or anything like that. So yeah, I can sell these things, but every single design has to be approved, every single one. And they all have to have an officially licensed sticker on the product when it leaves. You have to list that in all of your listings that this is officially licensed and that kind of thing. So there's just a lot to it, a whole lot to it. Yeah, I don't know. It's a lot. We'll see. We'll see if I renew it next year. I don't know. Right. Because it is a whole lot. So
yeah.
Because I still have to focus on my bread and butter right now at the same time, like where I'm making money and then incorporate these things. So yeah, think twice if it's something you want to do and if you can really commit financially to it and time-wise to it.
There are a lot of makers who do have licensing for the things that they sell. And maybe they're very selective. You know, they're in a particular area for maybe one of those Big Ten or SEC schools.
Yes.
So they know they're going to be selling a lot of merch in that community. And so it may be worth the $500 annual fee and all of that stuff. And then they can go gangbusters building up their inventory of stuff just for that school or mascot or whatever. Yeah, I see also a lot of things where you know, maybe it's trackers for different, you know, like football stadiums, like visiting. And I think those like maps and stuff are so cool, but you got to get, again, you got to be careful with the trademark and, you know, are you using the team's logo or just like typing out the name of the stadium? And I don't know what the difference is between those legally and what you can and can't do. And I just, I'm not, it's not worth it. I'm not doing
it. Well, and that comes back to my point where I said, just because a file maker is selling it doesn't mean it's okay, right? It just doesn't mean that it's okay. So you can't just trust the file maker that they're following copyright laws. And it just means, oh, because they're selling it, I'm good. No. And,
you know, Holly, we haven't even talked about how different phrases are getting trademarked. I mean, like, isn't it like boy mom is trademarked for different types of applications?
Wifey,
you know, like we are both in this like frivolous filings watchdog group on Facebook, and we'll include a link to that in the show notes because these people are watching to see what people and companies and organizations are trying to trademark. And there have been some absolutely ridiculous trademark filings. And just because someone files the trademark doesn't mean they're going to get it. You can file a letter of appeal, but that still takes time and effort.
And that's why that group was created, because the patent or the trademark office is like, oh, okay, yeah, we'll just file. Like they were just letting these things come through, like go through. And this group has really come in and done their due diligence to like watch for stuff and really try their best to file appeals in a timely manner. And so I've filed a few appeals for them, and it's worked. And yeah, you get people who just try to like jump on these phrases and just, and then they want to go around
trademark this for apparel, for stickers or whatever.
Yeah.
And the trademark may exist, but in a very limited format. Like this trademark is for these derivative works or this type of product. But the people who own those trademarks may, if you sell a sign and decor is not part of that trademark, they may still come after you.
Yeah.
Try to threaten you because they have that trademark, because they don't think you're going to do the due diligence to then counter and say, no, you don't own the trademark in this, you know, area. You own it in those. I will give you that, but you don't own it here. So no, this is not a violation. But then who wants to go through all of that time and effort? And, you know, it's sometimes it's just easier to take it down.
And the cost to trademark is not cheap.
No,
it's not cheap. These people are doing it frivolously on like so many phrases. And then they're getting these, you know, these appeals filed against them to try to not let it go through. And so I think it's actually starting to make people be like, oh, what was the one last year for Easter? But did you die in the DYE? And I'm like, first off, you're taking it from the Hangover movie and you're turning it into something Easter related. And that girl was going after everybody. And that frivolous filings group was like, oh, she tried it to me. Oh, she's trying to me. I mean, people are talking about it. So yeah, you just, it's crazy. But you're right. Sometimes it's just easier just move on. Take it down and move on.
You know, there's the principle of it and wanting to stand up. But if, you know, you're a solo shop and you don't have the finances to fight it on principle. And I think that's what some of the people prey on.
Yeah. You know, I am one of those people who, if I see somebody take a file that I've designed that's original to me and copy it, but in a way that it's a little different, a lot of times I'll just let it go. I'm like, I'm fine.
It's, you know, that whole like imitation is the most sincere form of flattery or whatever.
So typically I will allow, you know, it to go, right? I'll allow it to go through unless it's done multiple times by the same shop. And then I'm all like, no, hell no, roll up the sleeve, take my earrings off. I'm fighting. And so I will go through the Etsy process of actually having the copyright taken down for copyright reasons. I don't message them directly. I probably should, or I should be the nice guy, but I don't, you know what you're doing. I'm not going to give you that benefit of the doubt and let it go. Now, I have a friend who has been contacted by other sellers saying, well, you're copying my stuff And she's like, it's just the same font. It's not even like the same design. Or she's using a different font or something. So it's not like, it's so, the design is so tiny, like,
Subjective.
and that, like, yeah, it's not like a big piece of artwork. It just might be text, right? In a certain font and maybe a certain color or something. So you don't, like, you don't really own that. And I think that person is trying to intimidate them because they know they have no leg to really stand on.
Right.
So sometimes I'm all like, is it worth arguing with them back and forth? Is it worth them? I go, more than likely they're not going to file a claim with Etsy because they know they don't have a leg to stand on. That's why they messaged you first. They're trying to tell you it's to be nice, but no, that's not true.
I've had a situation where another seller will reach out to me and say, "Hey, this shop is copying one of your products and listing
Yeah.
photos and all of that." One of the tricks that this person, when I had this come up last year, told me is if you go into incognito mode in one of your browsers and go check out one of your products, right? If you suspect maybe if it's a really popular product that someone might be copying it. Then when you scroll to the bottom of the page, because you're in incognito mode, your own Etsy search history won't come into play. It will show you similar products. And when I did that, I found a shop that was ripping off an entire, like my most popular product, which is again something that literally everybody sells, but I have my own unique take on it. And they lifted my images
Ugh.
and then removed the background poorly in Photoshop and put a different background to try to like make it their own. And I was like, no. And then I go and I see their shop, and it's clear that every single item in that shop is ripping off another designer and another
Yeah.
person, you know, because when there is no cohesion at all in the product thumbnails, I'm like, ooh, I don't
Well,
see.
you know, this kind of brings me to a point. I know I don't have this in the show notes, but you know, selling laser files, a lot of times I would get asked, can we use your photos? And I always was like, no, because they're my photos. But then we started really thinking about it. And I did try to let people buy them to
Oh, I
use.
bought some a couple of times and I still use a couple of them
But at the
from
same
you.
time, I'm thinking to myself, okay, you're falsely selling a product. How does that customer know that your quality is going to look exactly like that? What if you're
Yep.
using birch and not maple? They don't know what they're getting from you, the seller. So while I understand that you're like, well, I just want to see if it'll like sell. Okay, but if you're buying the file from me, don't you think you want to like make sure you know how to use it and it works before you start getting 30, 40 orders on
Right.
something?
And there
Yeah, it
are
does.
some file makers that provide entire marketing suites.
Yeah.
But I think that's a really good point. Like, you may not be using the same materials. You may not have the same standards of
Right.
production that someone else does. You know, something we talk about a lot between the two of us is like char or, you know, the sticky stuff that'll kind of come out when you're using, plywood, right? There's glue in
Right.
there, right? Not everybody is as, what's the word? Particular, I guess, about
Right.
that, about
Right.
cleaning it or
Yeah.
masking or whatever. And so you're right. You're not always going to get the same quality.
Right.
And like I said, I have like two or three products that I know you designed that I have in my shop, but I also have side by side with the images you provided, I
Right.
have my images. So I
Right.
have them both in
Right.
there just to kind of show the variety. And I feel like mine are very similar to your originals, but your photos were better because they weren't taken with a phone. And so I'm like, I'm still going to use these because these I know I can match, right?
Right. And
But
how
I
many people
agree.
are not?
No, so
Yeah.
many people aren't. And, you know, I can understand trying to gain, you know, is this worth it? But if you are truly doing this as a business, part of what you need to do as a business owner is invest that time in the research and development and the testing. So whether that is files you make, but files you buy.
Well, and not even that. It's more so like your photos of your end product that you're selling is a part of your brand. If it, like you said
Absolutely.
before, if you can see when somebody is taking all these different photos, there's no consistency across your feed of your store showing the brand that you represent. I had somebody take a photo of mine, and not just mine, but other sellers as well. And it wasn't even a file I sell. It was an actual product I sell. And it's not even a product anybody else's, like the look of it isn't the same as anybody else's. I actually messaged that person because I was just curious, like, what were you thinking? And all I got was, oh, I'm so sorry. I'll take it down. And I'm like, I replied back. I was like, you're not sorry. You knew what you were doing. And when you're doing that with all these different people that you're taking these photos from, because I see a few here that are not yours that I have let those people know about, you're just doing a disservice to yourself because one, you don't have a product to make. Two, you're trying to undercut me and my pricing on my product that nobody else is making. And three, you're deceiving the customer into thinking, well, I looked at her ratings and she had like a two something. And I'm like,
there you go.
Yeah. So just as a customer, really just look at things and see, is there consistency? Is somebody else making the same thing? And if they are, it's probably because it's from a file, but just look at their product, like make sure that it's, you know, something really good. But yeah.
The one thing I thought we should talk about is the person who asked you for a file that you weren't selling for a unique product.
And I've had that happen multiple times, to be honest. I have had people reach out to me on a physical product shop. I rarely sell the files to the things that I sell physically. It's just, it's once in a while I do. I like to create those things for me to be unique for me, right? And I have had people message me and say, hey, can I buy the file for this? Or I've had somebody go, do you know where I can get the mold for this tumbler tag that you did? And I'm like, first off, it's not resin, so there's no mold. Second off, it's my design that I create and I sell for my shop and I laser cut it. But it happens more than you know. And I think to myself, I would never reach out to somebody and ask them that.
No, I want to sell what you're selling and making money for because I think it's cute. No.
And I'm going to charge less than you charge.
Right. You know, we talked last week or the week before, no, 2 weeks ago, about how early on when you were selling laser files, you weren't, you were doing like generating a mock-up, but now it's definitely better in our opinion to have an actual photo of a finished product and how that can inform adjustments you need to make to the file before you sell it. I have been doing a lot of that for some new products as I look ahead. But one of the things that I started doing, and a lot of makers will have their little like VIP groups or research groups. I have a small group. It's less than 100 people, but I would say that it's some of my like bigger fans, you know, people who purchase from me a lot. And so sometimes I'll post in that group, like I have a new product that I need to test. And let's be honest, like my kids and my niece and nephews, like they don't need 12 more Easter basket tags, right? Like there just comes a point where people are like, I know you're giving this to me, but I don't need any more. But I want a product that has been personalized because so much of my shop is personalized items. That's kind of my niche. So I'll post in that group and I'll say, hey, I need some testers. And initially I was doing everything at my cost and I wasn't charging anyone. But now what I do is I charge $5. If you want to be a tester, it's going to be $5. And that doesn't even really cover like my material or shipping costs for sure. But I feel like it's you have some skin in the game. You're getting a benefit of getting this product cheaper than I would ever sell it. And then I can get some useful feedback from folks on, do I need to adjust things on this file? Or are there things that I could do differently? So that's something I think some makers, you know, you might want to look into doing is offer, especially if it's stuff that's personalized or kids and like you legit, like at some point my mom is going to be like, Amy, I don't need any more signs that have different little illustrations for each grandchild. We haven't gotten to that point, but she has seasonal signs now. Cause I'm like, I gotta do it. And I'm just gonna give it to you. It's a way to then you get an evangelist, right?
Right.
To kind of help share your products once it launches. So
yeah. Well, you know, I would love to know, like, if anybody else has had these experiences, because what are some things that have happened? We have an anonymous, like, contact form on our page. If you've had a trademark issue, let us know, right?
Absolutely. We want to hear, and you know, we can bring it up in a future episode. I think these are topics that are definitely going to come back around at some point. We didn't want to scare everybody with the topic,
no.
right? But
right.
We want you to embrace your individuality and your uniqueness.
Yes.
What sets you apart, you know?
Yeah.
And creating original works is going to help keep you out of legal issues. And
Yeah.
it also boosts your brand's value.
It does. It
Right?
really, really does.
Understand and respect intellectual property rights. It's crucial for everyone in the creative space, truly. And, you know, like we said, if you have some thoughts, we want to hear. Go to lattesandlasers.com. Tell us what you think. Let's continue the conversation.
I would love to hear other people's stories. You know, you don't, like, again, you don't have to tell us who you are. If you want to tell a real story that we can share, I think it would help other people. Because I just think some people just aren't in the know. That was a heavy topic to cover. And, you know, I was asking Amy, you know, what should we go over some more funny Etsy things again?
Yes. Yeah, why not?
But I think that's a thing we had talked about. It could be a regular segment. So
Absolutely.
Have anything kind of crazy happen this week or last week?
I have someone who was asking if I do something similar to what she wants, but not what she wants. And she said, you know, is this something you could accommodate? And I said, well, send me what you want me to recreate. It was a drawing illustration that someone, I think, in her family had done. And I was like, yeah. And once I saw it, I was like, I can definitely convert that and do, you know, a sign from it. The question was, how big can you do? And I said, well, I'm limited by my laser size. And based on the dimensions and aspect ratio of this illustration, I could do either 14 by 11 or I could do 18 by 11, you know, as more of a landscape style sign. They replied, is that inches? And I was like, yeah. And forgetting that literally the rest of the world is not on inches, it's just the
right.
US, but I do worldwide on Etsy. She was asking, well, what does that look like? Like, do you want me to do the math for you? I already sent screenshots of what it would look like with a frame. So I'm just kind of like,
what do you mean? I know people are weird. Like, so I used to work with a party planner. This is off topic a little bit. I worked with a party planner and she'd always be like, I need letters or whatever cut for the sign. And I go, okay, well, what's the dimensions of the space so that I know how to fit it? I could never get, like, it was like measurements were like not like the concept of like understanding what I'm trying to say was just never there. It's just like,
that's something that I get a lot though, is how big can you do this, or what's the biggest you can do? And you run into limitations both with your laser size but also when it comes to shipping.
Oh yeah.
Like, I had someone once ask for a sign. I messaged you because I thought maybe with your Mira, you'd be able to do it. I mean, we're talking, they wanted like 3 or 4 feet wide sign. And I'm in Wisconsin and it would have meant shipping that to California. And I finally said, look, I think you're going to be better off finding someone local to you.
Local.
Because it is going to cost an exorbitant amount of money just to ship this, let alone the cost of my materials for this.
Right, right. I like to make small things for shipping reasons.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's so true. Yeah, I don't think people grasp the whole size issue. They
no,
don't.
We talked about that a couple weeks ago.
But it's like, is that a fault of our education system or what? I don't understand.
Well, and you should have dimensions in the product listing. It's even a variant thing, you know. So it should be in there.
Well, okay, that comes to I don't have this one. You like made me think of something. So when I sell reward jars, right? And I sell tokens, I have probably like 30, 40 different token sets. And they all fill a jar differently because each token set has different shapes. Like a pencil is going to be small and narrow, an apple is going to be bigger and more round. Right. So just because that one set might take about 36 to fill a jar, another set, because of all the different shapes, may only take 24. Right. And there's just really no way to know, for instance, because everything falls into the thing a certain way. And so I have made it so that my listings for reward jars talk about giving your child a set number of tasks. I want you to complete 20 things in order to get your reward, which, and I'm not a parent, so maybe, I don't know, maybe the full jar is a better thing to see, but sometimes knowing you've made 20 tasks that they have to do to achieve it is kind of a better thing. So I always kind of went that route in explaining what I think would work best for the jars, but that if somebody wants a full jar, that please inquire on the set of tokens you want, because it will vary how many will fill a jar. Mm-hmm. And I'll get the question, how many tokens fill a jar? And I'll be like, which set? Because I can't just tell you one, is because it's gonna vary. And they're like, well, why do you offer only 12? And I'm like, well, because people like to mix and match sets, you know, they mm-hmm. want 12 of this one, 12 of this one, 12 of this one, and they like to put them together. I try to create as much variety as possible, but I do mm-hmm. get that the size thing, they cannot grasp it. People just cannot grasp it, and that is a very common thing out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that happens a lot.
Well, and there's also just like customer communication, right? Like one thing I had recently, again, I sell a lot of personalized items, and I had to hound a customer to get the drawings so that I could convert them in order to make the product to send to her. And I messaged on Etsy multiple times, on email, and then I emailed one more time and I said, okay, if I don't hear from you, unfortunately, I'm going to have to cancel your order. And I, trust me, like, this was a large order. Yeah. Like somewhere between $100 and $150, right? Like, that's money.
Right.
And I said, you know, because I don't have anything to work from, and Etsy only gives me this amount of time in order to get the product to you in order to keep my star seller status, right?
Yeah, right.
And you can extend the time on an order once.
Yeah.
Once. You can change the production time. So I said, I am changing the production time to this date. If I don't hear from you by this one, I have to cancel. And I did finally hear back from her, and I got the illustrations late Sunday or yesterday. I mean, the product is supposed to go out today, but I got the stuff, so I'm going to print the shipping label, and I'll ship it tomorrow.
Yeah.
But just like...
No, yeah, the communication has been a big issue for me, too. I get a lot of people who ask me for customization of stuff, you know, like, well, can you change this or can you do that? Mm-hmm. And the biggest issue I am seeing all the time is that customers aren't clear up front, like, what that means. And I guess because I've been in this world for so long and I've seen that so many times, whenever I reach out to somebody, I try to give them as much detailed information up front so there's less back and forth. And there's so much back and forth. You know, a customer asking me, well, can I change the colors of these? Well, to what? Like, I need to know to what colors, because one, I don't have a listing that shows you the colors you can choose from. So what are you thinking? And two, I may not have what you need, because one, I may not carry that color, or two, I may not have enough of that in stock because of my anal retentive process of how I like to cut things perfectly in a row to maximize my space. And I may not have what you need. And so there's sometimes that question could go back and forth four times, when if you had just like stated, I'm interested in this, and I want to know if I can change this color to this color or something like that. So that happens so much, that back and forth on Etsy, just do do do. So yeah, that back and forth communication. I deal with this in my volunteer world too, trying to teach some of these younger people. Like, if you go to a vendor and you say, I need this for this many people, that if you go up front, it doesn't take you 3 days to get an answer.
Right.
So I wish there was more of that thought put into these customer requests. Just put it all out there. Give me as much information as you can so that we don't have to keep going back and forth and back and forth. But yeah, that happens a lot. Can I change the color to what?
Right. Maybe, can you?
I don't know. Like,
Maybe.
I need to know to
What do you
what.
want?
Yeah. And
Right?
what, yeah, what color are you thinking? You know?
Again,
Yeah.
like, thank you for reaching out and not just assuming that I can do
Yes.
this in
Oh,
purple,
because I
black,
have
and
had that.
green,
Oh, I've
right?
had that. I had somebody go, can I change the colors of something, this token set? And I was like, yes, that's fine. Just put it in the order notes when you check out so that I don't miss it because I have a lot of orders. She did it for that set, but she also did it for another set. I'm like, but you didn't ask me about that set. Thankfully, I had what she needed. I almost messaged her and been like, yeah, you didn't message. But then I was like, okay, don't be petty. Just take the order. It's fine. But it's funny.
You know, we know that how much time it's going to take if we don't have like an acrylic color in stock. Like,
Yeah.
you're not going to be able to necessarily get what you need that day. It's not like
No.
there are, you are maybe a different exception because you're in the Denver area and there's
Yeah.
Denver acrylics near you. So if you needed a solid color in a pinch, you could probably drive there and get it.
Yeah.
But in Wisconsin, like I don't have anywhere that I can drive to and easily say, I need 10 sheets of black and 5 sheets of red or whatever. I don't have anything locally. And so I have to rely on a place that then is going to ship. And some of them, you'll get things shipped out same day. But others, it takes 5 to 7 days for them to ship.
Yeah.
And then it has to get through shipping to you before you can
Yeah.
actually make the product.
Yeah. I don't think people realize where that,
The supply chain piece.
I don't make the acrylic here. I have to buy it.
Right,
You
right.
know?
I know we both keep quite a bit of acrylic in stock. Part of it is we're like, oh, I like that color. Give me that. Give me that. Give me that. But then it also is like, well, now what am I going to do with it? I
Yeah.
bought it. So I'm trying to limit now when I buy stuff to colors I know I'm using on a regular basis.
Yeah.
But that's why now I have some Easter themed products where I have a set like pastel color palette.
That's what I do too.
And I'm like, okay, you don't get to choose from all of my acrylics for these products. You get to choose from these 12
Yeah.
colors
Yeah.
because I know I have enough of those. But if I pulled in every single acrylic color I had,
Yeah. There.
I have a graphic with that, and I'm not willing to put that up on Etsy anymore because that's just gonna overcomplicate. People don't need to know I have four different reds. Just do you want red? I'll give you red.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I try to limit what is out there, and I try to explain to people that my token sets, I try to state that I pre-cut most of it, which if I can keep up, I do. But you know, and I try not to change them because it does throw off my calculations on how many I can get on a sheet versus, you know, well, if I,
Cuts
if I
into your
change it.
profit margins.
It does. It really does. And so I try to be flexible, but you know, sometimes it's not okay. Or I'm so busy that week that like I don't have time to change something for you. Like, so I'll say not at this time. You know, I can't make that accommodation for you at this time. Maybe in like a week or two, but you know, it happens. So,
Right.
but yeah, the communication thing is sometimes just like be just give me all the facts up front.
Right. Give it to me and then I'll let you know. There's going to be
Especially
less back and forth.
if there are people like, you know, your customer where that takes some days to get back to you. Like, it drives me
Well,
crazy.
and I've had people like that before who purchased a product But then got really sick and couldn't get me their list for like their Christmas movie tokens or whatever it was. And I'm like, I told, thank you for just at least letting me know.
Let you know.
You're okay with it. I'm going to print the label today because I have to for Etsy without canceling the order. But, and I'm going to do all this communication through Etsy. So if there is a dispute, right, it's all there that they said, yes, please do that. And I will get you the list as soon as I am able. You can hold my order until that time.
Right, right.
Because again, I don't want to. Yes, we love those customers. Be more of those people, please. I don't know. I think maybe as we close today's episode, you know, we provided you with valuable insights on the complicated topic of trademark IP, and maybe, you know, shared some stories that resonate with you as makers and small business owners.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just making sure everybody knows that we're kind of on this whole journey together, right? You know, we're here to help you and celebrate you in any way, not try to really like call you out in that sort of way. You know, we want to be here to support you, inspire you, that kind of thing.
So please join us next week for another episode of Lattes and Lasers. We, you know, want to see you again next Wednesday. And it's time, Holly, for another cheesy sign off. I picked one for us from the AI list. So,
okay.
Are you ready for it?
I am so ready for it.
Okay. It's Lattes and Lasers signing off with a shot of creativity and a double dose of joy. There's a line for you in the script, Holly.
I know. This next one. The next one. I think you saved the cheesiest for me.
I did.
Until our next blend, keep innovating and brewing your brilliance.
Okay. I saved your note. Alexa just saved your note. I heard that, Alexa. Oh, you sassy little diva.
It's such a... You know what?
She's sassy. All right, everyone. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Yeah. All right. Bye, guys.
Bye. This episode of Lattes and Lasers is brought to you by The Laser Collective. Unlock the full potential of your laser cutting and engraving business with our user-friendly laser files. Our carefully designed laser files are tested for quality and are commercial-friendly files, ensuring you can easily create beautiful projects that will impress your customers and drive profits for your business. Learn more at thelasercollective.com. Save 10% off your next order at thelasercollective.etsy.com with promo code LattesandLasers10.